This is a HeadGum Podcast.
In 86, Anna Martin wrote the first book of what became a cult. Now it's time for Babysitter's Club.
You want to talk about it now or later?
You want to talk about Jenkins?
No. I want to talk about the films that you love.
No. I don't want to.
Challenging. No, I want to talk about how challenging the films you love are, Jack.
Let's talk about Jenkins.
Once again, you made the suggestion this week.
Don't you dare.
And it was a pretty challenging film, wasn't it?
Don't do this. Listen, let me ask you this. Yep. When did this film come out?
1993.
Where were you, sir? Mr. Brave fucking hero of the people in 1993. I didn't hear a fucking peep from you about the challenging aspects of this film. Did
I? I was on the front lines. Here's the things I was speaking out against in 1993.
Yeah.
Contra.
The Iran-Contra affair?
AIDS crisis.
Okay.
Crack epidemic.
Okay. Wow. And
Nancy Kerrigan.
Troubling depictions of...
And challenging, troubling depictions of hot-button issues.
Hot-button issues in Mrs. Doubtfire.
Wrong-headed.
You want me to sing it for you?
Challenging depictions of
If I sing for you, will you let it go?
Enjoy dressing like women.
If I sing for you, will you move on and we can talk about something else?
Probably not, but I would like to hear it anyway.
There goes my hero.
Watching. Hell yeah.
And that's about you. And it's about you. And you really fucking... Wow. What about a slow clap?
Lot of challenging thoughts and dialogue in this film, wasn't there?
What? You... Wow, thank you.
Really challenging.
Oh, thank you for saying it. Oh.
You're welcome.
Oh, my goodness. This movie from 1993 doesn't hold up to standard.
Tough.
Oh,
tough
thank
one.
Thank you for noticing it and saying it.
Thank you.
You want to hear about Jenkins?
Yep.
We're in a fight.
Okay. You guys are fighting.
Yeah. Well, I mention it because he is probably going to come in here.
I know why you're mentioning it. You're trying to pit me against him. You're both doing this thing where you're like, manipulating all your friends and like claiming little friend, like staking out your territory. Don't think he didn't approach me either.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, listen, you can take whatever side you want. The reason I'm mentioning it is that when Jenkins gets annoyed with me, he comes into this room and rips up cardboard.
Okay.
And he knows that it goes on the podcast audio. And that's why I'm mentioning it.
Okay. Right.
You can take a side or not. Here's the fight. Jenkins wants his dinner. It's an hour past dinner time.
Okay.
And I have not given him his dinner.
Okay.
Whose side are you on currently?
Jenkins.
Okay. Now, listen to this.
Get your
Jenkins
shit together.
Insisted on having cat lunchtime, which is not a fucking thing, a few hours ago.
Okay. That's news to me.
And I gave it to him. And it's still in his bowl.
Well, was it good food?
It's the same food that dinner is. So Jenkins is asking me, listen to me. It's fancy feast. It's the fanciest kind of feast.
Okay.
It's the same food.
Okay. And how was it prepared?
I think probably in like some industrial like factory, they like took like...
And you expect him to eat that shit?
He loves it. That's what he wants. But he just wants it.
Have you ever read The Jungle?
That's what he wants, but he wants a different...
Have you ever read The Jungle?
Yeah, I know what it is. Upton Sinclair, and it's about factory farming.
Yeah, okay, great. Yeah. And that's what you're feeding your cat? Wow, you're digging yourself deeper and deeper into a hole, man. I know you were like you're trying to manipulate me now, just like Jenkins did, but...
But that's what Jenkins wants, that... Forget it. I feel like I can't win. Somehow it's my fault that Mrs. Doubtfire isn't up to code.
Yeah. Well, then, you suggested it. And you were aware enough in 1993 to know better, Jack.
Okay. Yeah. Fine.
Be better. Do better.
Okay. Now that we're past that, can we talk about some other aspects of the film? It's me. It's Jack.
It's a me, Jack.
And who else is it, rather than imitating?
Tanner.
It's a me, Tanner. And it's why are you so... And who's salty? I'm salty. Why am I salty? I'll tell you. I already told you. Because they thought Cyril was unwell at daycare, and he wasn't. And they sent him home, and it ruined my day.
Right. Why am I salty?
Yeah.
I'm not.
No, you're not. What's cute? What's cute that Cyril does? Here's what's cute. We read a book today that we got from the that Sarah got from the library about a porcupine, and Cyril calls him a pokeypine. That's cute. That's cute. Here's what else is cute, though maybe also troubling. Are you familiar with the app Honey?
Honey.
Is that the one
where we used the thumb kiss?
It's a Google extension. No, that thumb kiss was called Pair. You and I had an app that was just for couples.
Oh, you could only sign up if you were a couple.
Yeah.
And Jack and I signed up together, and we did thumb kissing.
Yeah. Upset our wives. then girlfriends, yeah. I think, probably. But Honey is like an extension where you can get like coupons on like Amazon and stuff.
Okay.
But it has a guy.
I'm not a coupon user.
Okay.
I don't use coupons.
It's not.
I find them insulting.
Well, you're not going to like this cute story. There's a guy on it that's just like this like round circle guy who has like a funny face and a smile, and he dances while Honey is waiting to decide whether or not.
Is it Mr. Delicious?
They could find a coupon. No, it's not Mr. fucking Delicious.
Do you remember Mr. Delicious?
No, I don't, and I don't want to remember who it is with you right now.
You remember
now.
Rax?
No.
Maybe you weren't in America by the time Rax closed.
Cyril got so obsessed with the Honey guy. He got Mr. obsessed Delicious. With him. And he calls him Q-Con Man.
Q-Con Man. I want to see. Who is he called?
It's the Honey logo.
I'm Googling Q-Con Man.
No, that's not going to get you anywhere. And I made him
cocoon,
out of a
cocoon. Sorry, Cocoon Man?
I got a... I got a paper plate and painted him on the paper plate, and so now we have Q-Con guy, and he like runs around and makes him dance in the house.
That sounds like fucking content. That sounds like content for like a
it's
a
cute
kids like a family experience website.
It's content. We could do something with it. We got to talk about this book.
How to do a fun craft where you make Q-Con Man for your boy?
Yeah, it's good. It's good. And what I did was good.
I searched Honey Man, and it's just not giving me anything.
It's actually kind of hard to find.
Honey app character, maybe?
Yeah, I guess. I don't know, man.
Can you draw him for me now?
I can show you the plate if you want.
Please.
Okay. All right. Vamp for me. I'll show you this plate. Okay. A fucking fantastic visual experience for our listeners.
Let's talk about the challenging aspects of this film, Baby Nation. Pretty tricky stuff with, like, cross-dressing and, you know, trans rights and stuff like that. Hard to make excuses for it. Like, one could just say, like, oh, it was 1993, but, you know, it was like they found every single possible song about, like, misgendering someone. Like, the Aerosmith song and, like, some Beach Boys song, it sounded like. That was tough.
There goes my hero. He's ordinary. I assume you were filling airspace by talking about how fucking virtuous you are for noticing all the challenging aspects of this film. Well, guess who also thinks this film is challenging? It's Q-Con Guy.
Oh, he's just sort of a... Surprisingly basic.
Yeah, it's pretty basic.
But I was expecting something much more involved. It's just like a U-shape with two... black dots above it.
Yeah, it's cute.
Yeah. Oh, and he's got hands and arms.
Yeah, pretty good job. That's a craft you can do with your kids. We must talk about this film. It's
Can I ask more about Q-Con Man?
I guess.
Just sort of curious about.
Yeah.
Curious about him a little bit. Is he a sexual being?
I think he lives for the Q-Cons.
And how does he reproduce?
Q-Cons are like it's like a term of art for his people for like egg sacs.
Okay. And how are the eggs fertilized?
I don't know. I've never seen it.
I'll tell you one way, one pretty big way eggs are often fertilized, unless you're like a fish.
Yeah.
Intercourse.
Well, not with Q-Con Man. This is not what
he reproduces like a fish where it's like egg sacs, on the like ocean yes. floor, and then like another
Tanner, the coupon man from Honey over. For the Honey app reproduces like a fish.
Okay, that's good to know.
Yes,
that's good to know.
I'm glad we've sorted it out, and I think we should. Honey advertises on podcasts.
Do they?
So I'll just send them this audio.
Can I read a tweet that our friend Cam sent me today?
And then we must talk about this book. Do you promise me? Okay. Say it. Quick, say the tweet.
I was listening to your podcast this morning, and I got to say, Keto Beto is an A-plus advertising troll. And I said, I can't believe these ad agencies haven't snapped me up yet. And he said, I can't believe these advertisers are still paying you.
And he is right. Keto Beto is not good. We can't talk about Keto Beto. We can't talk about our friend Kem Smith. What we shall do is talk about Mrs. Doubtfire. It's one of the movies from the 90s, and it's by Chris Columbus, isn't it?
And he's back, isn't he? Christopher Columbus, genocidal...
maniac.
Colonist conqueror.
Not content with the damage he did with Adventures in Babysitting, is back...
Turned homophobic... Thor slanderer turned anti-trans
perfect
bigot.
Great. This movie is really fun, despite your fucking energy about it and the fact that it doesn't totally stand the test of time. I defy you to tell me this movie is not.
I recognize
super fun.
That this is a movie that people love and have very fond memories of, yeah. So I'm not here to like sit and trash this movie. I did not enjoy it. And I think it's
what?
Because
why?
I had fairly high hopes for it. I was like, I remember this movie being great. I'm going to love this.
It's so
And then
fun.
Sat down and watched it and just sat there with like a puss on the entire time. Like,
why? It's funny. It's
this
fun
is so
and funny.
Lame. It's just like dumb slapstick.
You're dumb slapstick. Maybe you're too young for this movie. It's like it's a lot of it is improvised.
Okay. Well, it's that the thing about improv is sometimes it doesn't work.
Oh, okay. So Robin Williams, it doesn't live up to your standards for improv, fucking your highness. I'm sorry. I wonder whether the case might be that you have bad taste or that Robin fucking Williams is a bad improviser. I don't know. It's one of those two things.
It's just like so
Let's
corny.
Find out.
It's so corny.
It's super fun. You're bad. We're going to talk about this film. It's Mrs. Doubtfire. It's a babysitting movie. Again, much like The Road, highly, highly controversial topic.
Mm-hmm.
Can a dad babysit his own children? And what if he's pretending to be someone else? Does that make right. it easier?
What if he's pretending to be... I don't even remember. I never quite caught her first name.
Euphigenia.
Euphigenia.
Yeah. Euphigenia Doubtfire.
Right. An 60-something British lady.
Yes. From a place that doesn't exist.
Footballer.
In England. Yep. A fullback from a football team.
Widow.
Recent widow. 8 years prior, she was widowed. Her husband, Winston, passed on. He was hit by a Guinness truck.
Mm-hmm.
I suspect that the reason for that is that it allowed Robin Williams... to make the joke that he was killed by the drink.
Yeah.
He was quite fond of the drink.
Ah.
It was the drink that killed him.
How awful. He was an alcoholic.
No, he was hit by a Guinness truck.
Voluntarily celibate.
Yes, voluntarily celibate. She believes that...
Volcel.
That a Volcel, yeah.
Yeah.
She's a Volcel, which is someone
she's
who
on all the
that.
Message boards talking about like Volcel, the Volcel lifestyle.
Do you think you and I could infiltrate like an incel message board and just be Volcels and be like, I don't know what you guys are upset about. Like, we're at the same place and I'm like really happy about it.
You've got to change your thinking around this. Yeah. That's anything good. Any other fun facts? Fast fun facts about?
Fast fun facts about Mrs. Doubtfire. She.
That's pretty much it.
I think. Yeah.
Her brother is Danny. I don't remember anyone's names. Hilliard.
Well, that's complex.
Hilliard.
So this is a movie about exploring multiple.
Oh, and
she
and they're half. Sorry, not they're half brother and half sister.
Yes, but no. Now what you've done is you've kind of created a paradox because at some point in this film, Mrs. Doubtfire has to Robin Williams as Mrs. Doubtfire has to pretend to be his own sister.
Yep.
For a social worker.
Yep.
But that is not, that character is not Mrs. Doubtfire. That character is Mrs. Hilliard. And she looks exactly like Mrs. Doubtfire.
Oh. Okay. Yeah. That's challenging.
That's challenging. There's a lot to think about. We're going to describe this movie because a lot of people haven't seen it or a lot of people don't remember it. It's your turn to describe the film. I hope you'll do so honestly and be a
Mrs. Doubtfire is a big believer. I'm looking through the quotes from the film and just a couple more fun facts about Mrs. Doubtfire.
Mm-hmm.
She's a believer in like the natural body movement. So like,
yes,
she's in shape. She's got a Mediterranean look. Natural, there's a healthy, scene where she's the way God made her.
Shows her hairy legs on a bus, and a very progressive bus driver who is falling for her mm-hmm. says, "I like that.
I like that Mediterranean looking women. Natural, healthy. That's the way God made you.
But he broke the mold when he made me, dear. He made me very special.
He sure did.
Mm-hmm. And it's good.
Mm-hmm. How old is that? Is that him?
Yeah, it's Mr. Jenkins has arrived.
What is he doing? Did he open the door? He's like a yeah. ranger.
Yeah.
Clever girl.
Mr. Jenkins has arrived. He's so far... since we started recording, he's knocked the other cat's medicine off the counter.
Right.
And now he's opened the door and he's just sitting there.
Looking at you or looking away from you?
I can't see him. He's hiding behind. He's like sitting on the step. And he's allowed the other cat in. The other cat has arrived. Princess Cutie Face is here.
Okay. And how is she holding up these days?
She's doing good. She's got arthritis. She's the light of my life. I love her more than anybody I've ever known.
Not even your son.
I think the fact, here's what I'll say. The fact that my son is a reasonable person to put in this conversation is the highest tribute I could give to my son.
He's in the running.
It's like worth considering.
Right.
Yes.
You're not willing to make a call either way, but he's right. like, he's
up there and it's like, it's not a crazy conversation to have.
Right. That's good for him.
I'd love for you to describe this novel.
Why do I have to do it?
Because I did it last time.
Okay, I'm going to talk about every
First Strangler things, right? No, I don't want that. No, you already have. It's not fun for anyone. It's like people get it.
Do you want me to describe the novel or not?
Describe it and here's what. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to give you 70 seconds to describe the novel and then 10 seconds to
93 seconds.
Okay. I'll give you
the
book, 93.
The film, the video, not fine. The radio.
It's a radio novel. It's a radio novel for the silver screen.
Visual radio novel.
It's a visual radio novel.
That's what they call them in Japan.
And listen, here's what we're going to do. We're going to give you 93 seconds. So we're going to have 80 seconds during which you describe this novel.
Okay.
And then 13 seconds that's like free form time. And during those 13 seconds, you can be like Max Headroom. Or no, not Max Headroom. Who's the... Oh, the Micro Machines guy. As fast as you can, and we'll even speed it up.
Yeah.
Just say all the problematic things. And maybe I'll speed it up so fast that it's like hard to hear so people don't have to fucking like just be bummed out. How's that sound?
Yeah. Okay.
I'm going to give you 80 seconds and then no problematic stuff in the 80 seconds. And then I'll sing to you.
I'm pulling up this Medium article called The Pain of Revisiting Mrs. Doubtfire. No.
Okay, but not for this part.
Yeah.
Ready? 80 seconds, and then I'll tell you when it's time to start to say the problematic shit real fast.
Let me make sure I've got...
You just literally just watched a movie. How hard is it to describe it?
Pretty tough.
Okay. Then I want to tell you some theories I have about the film. That'll be fun.
Okay, I'm ready.
Ready?
Yep.
On your marks, get set, go.
All right, so Danny Hilliard is a bum, and he is a voice actor, and he gets fired on his first day, last day at work. And then he goes and picks up his son, it's his son's birthday, and he goes home, and he has zoo animals there. And then the neighbor calls Sally Field, and Sally Field is like, comes home, and she's like, Danny, what are you doing? I need a divorce. And they get divorced, and... he's he's told that he can't have custody of his kids, and his kids are his life. And then he decides to pretend to be a lady called Mrs. Doubtfire, an old nanny lady, and applied to be the kid's nanny, and they love her, and they... And she kind of is their nanny, and eventually the two older kids figure it out because the boy, Joey Lawrence's little brother, sees him going bathroom vertically. And Sally Fields is also dating Thomas Crown Affair, and it's pretty challenging for Mrs. Doubtfire, who's actually Danny Tamborelli. And... eventually, he gets too drunk at a restaurant and accidentally slips up and reveals that he's their dad.
And time.
And then the 13 seconds?
Yeah,
do I have that?
You've got 13 seconds to say the problematic things in the film. Go.
Okay, lots of inappropriate jokes, a lot of pretty transphobic and sexist jokes as well. And then there's a lot of like weird like sex shaming kind of stuff happening.
And time. Great. There goes my hero.
I'm on a website. I've gone to a website called The Tilt. .com. Okay. Tilt is spelled with a Y.
Mm-hmm.
And they have an article called "Is Mrs. Doubtfire Sexist and Transphobic?"
Perfect. That sounds like something that you'd love to fucking read. Yeah.
They have a poll here where they've said, yeah. "Is Mrs. Doubtfire sexist and transphobic?"
He closed the door.
87. Clever girl.
He closed the door. How the fuck did he do that?
87.5% of the respondents in this poll said that it is not. Sexist
okay.
or transphobic.
Well, there you go.
So clearly I'm on the right side of history.
How did he close the door?
That freaks me out. That freaks my bean.
Yeah.
That freaks my bean.
I have a number of fan theories about this movie. A lot. Okay. I have a lot of fan theories about this movie. I have a lot of intricate and extreme fan theories about this movie.
Okay.
First, I think we should talk about the divorce.
Okay.
And then we'll go into the fan theories. How's that sound? I want to take Sally Field's side in this film.
Guess how old Sally Field was in this movie?
43.
Now I can't remember.
Okay, perfect. Okay, I would like to take Sally Field. No, don't Google it. We'll just live with that. We'll live inside that. Why? Who cares?
47. Can you believe that? She was 47.
Yeah, she looked like she was in her like mid-40s.
No, she looked like she looked and was meant to be like she was in her mid-30s.
She's a very attractive young lady. Now listen to me. Sally Fields divorces Mrs. Doubtfire, a.k.a. Danny Hilliard. Mm-hmm. And the reason Danny for this is that while she is at work trying to fucking seal
like
the
interior design
contract. Although the kids are being punished and are not allowed to have
parties
because of some transgression that is
described. Joey Lawrence's little brother did
after quitting his job for a dumb reason. Which is, yes. What are you doing? You're reading the IMDb page for Sally Fields. I can tell that you're not
looking
paying attention.
At you. Literally no. Looking at you.
No.
Waiting like, for you to finish whatever sentence you were about to say.
You know how
say.
Newscasters, like when they're bad at reading the teleprompter, you can see their eyes moving back and forth? That's what you're doing. You're trying to read my face. Is that what's happening? And say what you're actually doing.
Looking at you.
Okay, fine. Well, stop looking at me and start painting.
And now I'm just trying to aggravate you by moving my eyes around an empty screen.
You're like the Mona Lisa. Listen, he quits his job and then like picks up the kids and is like, we're going to have a party, an impromptu party at the house. And somehow within the hour hires a petting zoo.
Yeah. And he's like broke.
They set a bunch of animals free on the lawn, and the cops arrive, and when Sally Fields gets home, the kids are listening to House of Pain, which is inappropriate.
Having a birthday in the house.
What the hell is going on around here?
Okay, man.
Okay.
For that age.
Like swears?
Yeah, jump around. That sentiment.
Jump up and get down.
It's not something that kids should be exposed to.
Right.
And there's a horse in the house.
There's a horse in the house, and, and they've intentionally, in a way that feels cruel or at least irresponsible.
Yeah.
Danny says that they've given it lots of water. When Sally Fields reaches under its penis to unplug the stereo system.
Yeah, he says, watch out. He says,
careful, it's had lots of water.
Yeah.
So that's not why is it good? In the house?
That's not good. And she's like,
what, it's illegal.
Like, this has been building up for 15 years, and now, like, this is the last straw. And it's right. And she does divorce him. And they don't get back together at the end of the movie.
I feel like that farm guy should have known it was illegal to bring farm animals into
the petting zoo. Guy just shows up and leaves the animals at their house and then leaves.
I didn't know that was allowed.
It shouldn't be. So I've got
we had a petting zoo at our office once years ago.
Oh yeah, I made a big fuss about it.
Yeah,
it was a real issue. Do you remember?
There goes my hero. Watch him as he goes.
I don't know if we've told this story on the show before, but it's like kind of a funny story. Like, the office manager, who's a very nice person who I liked very much, decided to get a like a mini horse.
Pony. It was like right when Parks and Rec was like,
yeah, it was like
up
a
their
thing.
Butts about like a mini pony.
And I was very,
it was Valentine's Day,
upset about it because of animal rights. And I felt that the horse was being mistreated. But I didn't want, like, it had already happened, and I didn't want our office manager to feel bad. But she kept coming over to me and being like, because I love animals, she was like, Jack, what are you doing? You're just sitting at your desk, like, you've got to come and interact with and, like, take pictures with this mini horse. Like, you're the person who's, like, going to love this the most. And eventually, our friend Matt saved us, and he was like, Jack's allergic to horses.
That's a good way to get out of any situation. That's what Thomas Crown says to avoid eating spicy food.
Yeah.
In this movie, in this visual radio novel that we read.
Listen, I have a number of fan theories about this book, and I want to run you through all of them. I've got
one. I forgot a thing that was problematic.
Two. We're done with that. You had your chance. It's over.
Mr. Lundy, like, saying, oh, does your friend have, like, a girlfriend who can... who I can do sex with. Remember that scene?
Are you wearing lipstick? Yeah. Why? Rubbed off. From home. Girl I used to date. She's a waitress.
Waitress?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. On the way to the bathroom, couldn't keep her hands off me.
You dog.
You scallywag.
Hey, I got the stretch outside. Does your girlfriend have a girlfriend?
Hey, it's the 90s.
Yeah, there's a scene in the movie culminates when they go to a fancy restaurant, and Mrs. Doubtfire and Robin Williams have to both coexist in the restaurant. And, like, one of them is meeting with this guy who's going to give him a TV show, and the other is being Mrs. Doubtfire with the family. The guy who's giving him a TV show asks him if... why were we talking about this? Like, he explains his lipstick away by saying that he met a girl in that was like an old girlfriend and made out with her and got her lipstick. And then the guy was like, does she have a friend? And this is like really fucking like got your hackles up when you've written a fucking pompous letter to salon.com about it, apparently. And well, let's hear it.
They reached
here
out
goes
to
my
me.
Hero. Yeah.
They're like, we've been saving a slot for you.
Yeah.
On salon.com.
And it really just that you won't stand for this type
tough.
Of stuff, will
it's
you?
Tough.
And then
in
1993, will you?
It's challenging.
Oh,
no,
that's tough.
9-year-old Tanner, he no. would not stand for this.
Front of the picket line. Listen, here's what I think we should do. We'll take a break, and then I'm going to fucking spend the entire rest of the show telling you my fan theories about it.
Okay.
Okay. Bye. Everybody, it's Jack again with a brand new update about the delightful family mystery mobile game, June's Journey. I have been making real progress solving puzzles and getting stuff to put on my cool estate in the fun world of mystery, danger, and romance that's conjured up by June's journey. A game set in the roaring 20s about a daring young woman named June who's traveling to her sister's estate to uncover scandalous family secrets and customizing her own luxurious estate island in the process. Tanner, unfortunately, is still pretty convinced by the ad brief we were sent that he has actually been assigned on a real secret mission to uncover the killer of June's sister, Claire. The good news is that after some extremely frustrating conversations with the unbelievably patient people at the Central Connecticut Steamship Authority, I was able to clear up the fracas regarding the steamship that Tanner rented. But the bad news is that, if I'm reading this hastily scrawled missive correctly, he appears to have gotten himself horribly lost in a hedge maze in Würzburg, which I think is in Germany. According to the secret code on the back of the letter, which, to be clear, he's just written this part upside down, he is in good spirits and he is hot on the tail of Grandma Heath, and I shouldn't worry, but could I please send him 40 ducats in an unmarked envelope so that he can bribe the butler, which sounds both complicated and questionably legal. I'm going to keep you guys posted on this, but in the meantime, you can discover your inner detective just like I have when you download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android. I have to go. There is apparently a carrier pigeon at the door with a new message from Tanner. Okay, here's where I talk about Mrs. Doubtfire fan theories, and I've got a lot of them, and I would like for you to engage with me on this topic, and I've got a ton. And let's start with the easiest one. Ready?
Yep.
Stu is daddy.
Stu is daddy. Don't know what that means.
Okay, there's a man in this movie. His name is Thomas Crown Affair, and he is Pierce Brosnan, and he is pretty nice. And here's my theory. He's the daddy of the kids.
There's a moment in the film
where
Mrs. Doubtfire is sitting at a pool bar, and Stu comes up and talks to another gentleman, an associate of his, here.
And you think it's going to be like, this is where...
And you think he's going to be mean.
This is where, like, Mrs. Doubtfire is going to get evidence that, like, mommy's new boyfriend is an asshole. Because he's going to be like, oh, I'm just trying to fucking, like, hit it and quit it, baby.
The associate is like, Stu with a woman with kids?
Yeah.
Now I've seen everything. And Stu turns to him and says, those kids are angels.
She's got an awful lot of baggage, though. Three kids.
Three terrific kids, and I'm crazy about them. Especially that little Natalie. Look at her. She's a sweetie pie.
Yeah.
They're the light of my lives.
Yeah.
Lights of my life.
I especially love the youngest one.
Matilda.
Matilda from Mara Wilson.
Matilda.
And why would you say that unless you were daddy?
He's daddy.
He's daddy of the kids.
Oh, because... Sally Field went to college with him.
Yeah, she went to college with him. And then when they first meet, he shows up because he's like a
The oldest one, Liddy, is maybe 14.
Yeah.
So you're saying that Sally Field finished college 14 years and 9 months ago. Or was in college 14 years and 9 months ago. But we've already established that she's 47.
I'm not making a claim.
She goes to college a little later in life.
I think that it's possible and even common for people to go to college later in life.
Yeah, I'm not
and
saying it's not.
B,
you're the one who's saying it's not.
Well, let me make another claim. It's possible to meet someone in college and then fuck them later.
I don't have any personal experience with that.
Okay.
But I suppose I could see how it could happen.
Stop trying to poke holes in my theory before I even fucking lay it out for you.
Okay. Stu is daddy.
When he first meets her in the film, he's
Stu is
like,
daddy, more like a thick soup.
That's what Robin Williams says. And now who's a good improviser?
Stu, That's more of a thick soup than a name, really.
Me?
Okay.
That's off the cuff.
Listen, I wanted to tell you this. Stu is like a real estate developer, and he wants to develop a big mansion property, whatever.
In San Francisco. And they all live in San Francisco, and they're all fucking rich. And she's they live in like a very nice part of
it. She's an interior designer, and the movie starts with like her boss being like, holy shit, this guy's Stu. He's like a big noise, and he's specifically requested you. And she's like, oh, Stu, holy shit, we knew each other in college, whatever. And then fucking he shows up. And when they have a meeting, he's so handsome, and he's so hashtag swoon.
He is very handsome.
Yeah, and he's very hashtag swoon. And here's what he says. Horny. He says to her,
you realize I've been following your career and the trades these past couple of years. I'd love to get reacquainted.
Okay.
So they've seen each other within the last couple of years.
Well, no. I think specifically they haven't.
No, they have.
He has to follow her in the trades.
Okay, starting a couple of years ago, though.
Oh, okay. I get it. Yes, yes, yes. Okay.
Since so they haven't seen each other for 2 years.
Right. And then ever since they last saw one another, he has had to resort to following her in the trades.
Right.
The interior design trades.
Yes.
Yes. And the trades, you did your research. I assume you know what the trades are?
The trades are like real estate industry publications.
Okay. And they are called...
Trades is a term for like if you get graphic novels, you can get them as like a little thin one, or you could get them as like a cool thick one that has a bunch of them in them.
Got like six.
Yeah, and so they do that for real estate.
And it's
like superheroes.
Graphic novels
of real estate. Yeah. You should know this.
That doesn't sound very.
You should know this. It's real estate stuff.
Sometimes when we record, and I know you're sitting in your laundry room.
Okay.
So it doesn't surprise me.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes when we record, there's a dress hung on the wall behind you in such a way that it makes it look like there's
a ghostly lady. Well, this is a perfect segue. That is scary. This is a perfect segue into my next theory, which is the Mrs. Doubtfire Sixth Sense theory.
Okay. And I haven't seen the film. And please, no spoilers.
Okay. No, I'm not going to spoil Sixth Sense. I wouldn't. Yeah. I couldn't.
Right.
But
that's a babysitting movie.
What if when Mrs. Doubtfire, a.k.a. Robin Williams, quits his job at the beginning of this film, he dies of a heart attack right then and there?
Okay. What's that have to do with Sixth Sense?
Just forget that I said
I haven't seen the film.
Forget it. Forget that aspect of it.
Okay.
But then... He's not actually in this. No one can see him because he's a ghost.
This is
in
Ghost
this movie.
Dad.
It's Ghost Dad. The Ghost Dad theory.
Ghost Dad theory. Yeah.
He's not really in this. So that's why when.
Oh, don't get me started on problematic films.
I don't want to talk to you
ghost
about
dad.
Ghost Dad. Yeah.
Hey, Jamie, clear my schedule. She's not my secretary.
Is she asleep?
Yeah. And she is asleep. Yeah. Probably woke her up. She's sleeping on the couch.
Listen, Jamie is me. I like to fall asleep on the couch. That's what I like.
Yeah. We call it Sleepy Jamie.
Yeah. I call it Sleepy Jack.
Yeah.
That's me. I like that.
I will sit up. If I'm up there with her, I will sit up and she texted me and said, did you call my name? Nope.
Leave her alone.
Back to sleep.
Go back to sleep.
I love you.
Listen.
Jamie will, if I'm up there.
That's not what we're talking
about. We'll watch TV and she'll fall asleep on the couch next to me.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, she's going to object to this, but I would say starting at about 8:30 p.m.
Yeah, probably.
That's when the window
opens.
But
this is, think about, you've talked about this. There's a thing that's like where you, like, you want to postpone the day from ending.
What is it? It's retaliatory. Like insomnia or something like that?
Yeah, you came up with, you had some fucking big fancy name for it. But I have this, but my version of it is involves going to sleep on the couch. Because if I sleep on the couch, I'm still having a day.
Right.
I'm just like, my day is still happening. Like the part of my day that's nice, where I don't have any obligations, is still happening. I'm just taking a nap on the couch. I haven't gone to bed yet.
That makes sense to me, except I don't fall asleep on the couch.
Yeah.
Because I'm too busy having the fucking time of my life.
Playing video games.
Playing video games. Yeah. Watching YouTube videos.
Yeah.
You know?
So this is why when they show
man
up,
stuff.
When they show up at the house, when Sally Field shows up at the house, there's a cop outside who's just standing there, like documenting the animals. Right?
It's your residence, ma'am?
Yes. Sorry to say it is.
Are you aware that it's illegal to possess animals of a barnyard nature in a residential area, ma'am?
What if you're married to one?
Yeah.
Then the animals are running wild.
Yep.
Robin Williams isn't really there. Later in the movie, Sally Field shows up at quote-unquote Robin Williams' apartment where the kids are, like for their one day of custody. And she picks up the Chinese food and she smells it and she makes this face like it's like rotten.
Oh, yeah. He's feeding his kids rotten Chinese
food. The food is rotten because he's not there.
Right.
There is no Robin Williams. Later in their home, everything in the house gets burned and destroyed. The pots like start boiling over and like shit gets set on fire. That's what would happen if the kids, like if Sally Field had to go to an important job and leave the kids by themselves. There is no Mrs. Doubtfire.
I'm trying to think of all the characters I saw interact with Mrs. Doubtfire.
Yeah.
And what I'm realizing now is I only saw Sally Field.
Right.
Interact with it. And I'm thinking now it's not a ghost dad scenario. It's a Fight Club scenario.
It's Fight Club. Exactly.
It's Fight Club.
And think about this. So later, the Mrs. Doubtfire character in the way the movie presents it, it's that Robin Williams gets a job being like kind of a Mr. Rogers type TV presenter as Mrs. Doubtfire.
Right.
And so the end of the movie, like they're all watching the TV and they see her on the TV. That's who Sally Fields is talking to this whole time. She's like, she's using this TV show that's Mrs. Doubtfire to babysit her kids because she's like a single mom. Her husband recently died of a heart attack. Okay. And that's who she's like created this character for.
This fan theory of yours is like begging for like a trailer remix, you know? Like someone needs to do. Do people still do that? Or is
I'll do it. I'll do it.
Okay.
I love
trailer
that.
Remix where it's a psychological thriller written by Chuck
Palahniuk or Palahniuk, and nobody knows.
Pike.
Yeah. That's how Cyril says shit when he doesn't know how to say it. I'll just be like,
can someone do that?
Yeah.
Please?
Please.
God, we all used to be so creative, and we also all used to try.
Yeah, we tried a little bit, didn't we? Instead of fucking
and
just looking at, listening to fucking sea shanties on TikTok, we would make something ourselves, wouldn't we? Can I tell you my third fan theory for Mrs. Doubtfire?
What was the first one?
First one was Stu is Daddy.
Yes. Okay. Yes.
Second one is I'm going to rename it Mrs. Doubtfire Fight Club. Mrs. Doubt Fight Club.
That's good because I haven't seen Sixth Sense and I don't want any spoilers.
Okay. Here's my third fan theory. You ready for this?
Yep.
The events of Mrs. Doubtfire take place following a major biological weapons attack on the United States.
Okay. Trying to think of any evidence to support that.
Okay, would you like me to try to give you some?
Yeah.
It's why everyone's acting so fucking weird. Tell me that everyone is not acting fucking weird in this movie. They're bananas. They're off the fucking charts with how they're acting. Sally Fields is like, even assuming that she thinks that this woman who looks exactly like her husband is the nanny. She's constantly like allowing this nanny to give her like insane life advice. Like you shouldn't have sex.
Oh, my, and, like, talk about sex.
How long after Mr. Doubtfire passed away, Winston, did you feel any desire?
Never.
Never.
Never again.
Never again?
Once the father of your children is out of the picture, the only solution is total and lifelong celibacy.
Celibacy?
Yes.
It's really fucked. And like the nanny is like, Mrs. Doubtfire is like unbelievably rude to Thomas Crown Affair and like tells him he has a small penis a number of times.
Well, and that's so tricky. He tries to, she tells him he has a small penis, which is fine.
Can you help me with something? I found this outside.
Yes, this is off my Mercedes.
Off your Mercedes, dear? You own that big, expensive car out there. Oh, dear. Well, they say a man who has to buy a big car like that's trying to compensate for smaller genitals, is he?
And if that's your thing, if your thing is having a small penis, fine. We're not here to yuck any yums.
Okay.
Here's the thing that's weird about Thomas Crown Affair. Mrs. Doubtfire literally tries to kill him at the end of the film.
Right.
And at the end of the film...
Mrs. Doubtfire puts like cayenne pepper on the shrimp and he almost chokes on it.
And Mrs. Doubtfire then saves his life by doing Heimlich very poorly.
Yeah.
And then after that, Mrs. Doubtfire says to Thomas Crown Affair, sorry for almost killing you. And they just shake hands.
Yeah. It's wild. Nobody's acting normally.
At one point, Mrs. Doubtfire throws an apple at the back of Thomas Crown Affair's head and beans him. Just beans him.
Yeah.
That would hurt.
Fuck yeah. It's
and
wild.
He turns around and she says, oh, it was a drive-by fruiting. Yeah. I forgot a bit I was going to do at the top of the episode. I was going to go, hello!
I wish you had.
And Thomas Crown Affair, instead of investigating,
yeah,
just turns around and goes back. Like he's like an NPC in a video game.
Yeah.
Where it's like, if it's not scripted, he doesn't know what to do.
But that's not even the craziest reaction that happens in this movie. The craziest reaction that happens in this movie that proves that everyone in this film has been like affected by a major biological weapons attack is prototype Mrs. Landingham from The West Wing, who's actually from The American President, is in this film.
Yeah, which is essentially like a pilot for The West Wing.
Yeah, and the woman who plays Mrs. Landingham in The American President is in this movie, and she's a social worker.
Yeah.
There's a scene in this film where she's gone over to Robin Williams' house, and he's having to be Mrs. Doubtfire and himself all at once.
Well, it's not Mrs. Doubtfire.
Right.
It's Mrs. Hillard.
It's Mrs. Hillard. He's pretending to be his own sister. At one point, he's like wearing the dress and everything, but has not got the face on.
Yep.
And Mrs. Landingham wants a cup of tea. And
just a weird demand.
It's weird. That's already weird. And the way that he deals with it is he opens the refrigerator, puts his face in a cake, and then pretends he has a face mask.
A meringue face mask.
And while he's talking to her, the face mask keeps dripping into the tea.
Like blopping down in a really gross way.
This is my nightly meringue mask, part of my beauty regimen. What it is basically egg whites, creme fraiche, powdered sugar, vanilla, and a little touch of alum. There you go, dear. Oh, there you go. You've got your cream and your sugar now. It's a little cappuccino. One drop or two. Would you like another one? Oh, there you go. Oh, as you can see, I can't stay with you, dear. I'm melting like a snow cone in Phoenix.
The way that she reacts to this is that she drinks the tea.
Yeah.
And takes on her finger some of the dripping face mask, puts it on her face to test if it like works on her face, and then also tastes it.
Yeah.
That is a completely, like, you are so far
removed. What was
this
theory again?
The events of Mrs. Doubtfire take place following a major biological weapons attack on the United States.
I don't think, I think
everyone has gone.
This. I will say this.
Out of their
I
minds.
Have lived and am living through a global pandemic. And I don't think if at this point in time, my instinct would ever be to eat the frosting off of.
But if your brain had been eaten by like a chemically produced fungus from an enemy of the state.
It's whatever that disease, that like bacteria that makes you like cats.
Yeah, exactly.
It's that, except like weaponized and on like a devastating scale.
Okay, I've got two more little pieces of evidence for this. Ready?
Yep.
First involves understanding something about the Nash equilibrium.
Okay, and I understand everything about that. So
okay, well, shall I say it for listeners, or do you
probably?
Okay, or do you want to?
These dullards, you know.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. I'll do it. In game theory, the Nash.
Do you want me to, or do you want to? I'll let you.
No, you do it. You go ahead.
Nah, I'll let you.
Okay. In game theory, the Nash equilibrium is the most common way to define the solution of a non-cooperative game involving two or more players. In a Nash equilibrium, each player is assumed to know the equilibrium strategies of the other players, and no player has anything to gain by changing only his own strategy. It is the basis for something you are probably familiar with called mutually assured destruction.
Mm-hmm.
The idea that if we all amass nuclear weapons or biological weapons and everybody gets it, no one's going to use them.
Right.
Right?
It's a theory.
Yeah.
That I'm uniquely talented at.
Right.
Upending.
Yeah. You're...
When one plays games with me,
yeah,
one will often be frustrated by my total lack
erratic
of commitment
action.
To
yeah.
winning.
Yeah. Yeah.
My erratic action and what I call my the kingmaker strategy.
Oh, where you'll just make somebody else win.
Which is where God, when I've recognized that I'm not winning, what yeah. I will do is look around the room, decide who I want to win, and then just scorched earth everyone else.
It's good.
My strategy shifts from trying to win myself
to win for
trying to keep
else.
You from winning.
Okay, well, that's not what's happening in this movie. Another way of describing the theory of mutually assured destruction, Tanner,
mm-hmm.
is as an idea whereby if you have sufficient doubt that the enemy will fire, that is the best way to ensure that they will miss. If you doubt that they will fire, the attack misses. Misses.
Oh, I don't understand that one because like, a lot of people fire and get hit.
Misses. Doubt. Fire.
Misses. Doubt. Fire. Okay. So that one wasn't actually about the theory. It was just about the pun.
Misses. Doubt. Fire.
Right.
Finally, Tanner, at the 55-minute mark of this film, Mrs. Doubtfire sets the kitchen on fire, and it looks like it's going to go badly. And what she does instead of making dinner is she orders a very fancy meal from an Italian restaurant called Valenti's,
mm-hmm.
and with the intention of serving it as her own creation.
Yep.
Which the Valenti's
does.
Man shows up. The delivery
That's
man shows
she executes
up.
On flawlessly.
Yeah. And he tells her that the meal is going to cost her $135.27.
Hey, here's your food.
How much do I owe you?
$135.27.
Right, and as we know,
it's
Luke 1:34.
It's a moment of shock. No, this is not a Bible verse, Tanner. But what do the numbers 13527 mean to you?
Zip code.
Check it out. Check it out on Google.
You want me to Google something?
Yeah.
All around me are wait. Do 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 do. Tanner Googles. I forgot the numbers.
13527.
Gene result.
No.
DTNA.
No, that's a false flag.
Distro. That's a false flag.
Yeah.
Okay. Executive order 13527.
Yeah. Click on that. See what that is.
Oh, it's on ObamaWhiteHouse.archives.gov.
What is it?
Executive order 13527, and then they've used two N dashes here.
It's actually two hyphens to create.
Oh, is that two hyphens
to create the appearance of an M dash? Yeah.
Okay. Medical countermeasures following a biological attack.
Wow.
Subhead establishing federal capability for the timely provision of medical countermeasures following a biological attack.
What do you think about that as evidence for my theory, Tanner?
It's tough. It's tough to think about.
What
this
do you
is
think
an
about
EO?
That?
This dude did this as an executive order? What did he know?
He'd seen Mrs. Doubtfire.
He'd seen Mrs. Doubtfire. He loves it. It's his favorite film.
He'd seen it, and he was worried about mutually assured destruction.
Wow. Wow, United States Postal Service delivery of medical counter. This guy, what does he know? You know? Okay.
I rest my case.
Your case rested.
Yeah.
Signed, sealed, delivered. I'm yours. Can I do a segment?
Yeah, I love a segment for you. Yeah, let's have one for you. I've been talking a lot.
I would love to do a segment.
Yeah.
If I can.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a segment.
Yeah, let's hear it.
It's called Me Like a Debonky.
And it's about Debonky, and Anne Martin is a big fan of Debonky, and she writes, this is to Debonky.
Right now, it's...
beginning of some of her books.
It's 8 days from now. It's a Saturday afternoon. Mm-hmm. Jack is editing this episode, and he's busily trying to figure out what the
segment
audio
music?
Drop for Me Like a Debonky was, and then like dig through the archives to find it somewhere.
He's not happy. He's not looking happy.
Pissed.
He's looking pissed. Yeah. Cause he's looking at the, like, he's like, I've just done an hour of this episode and there's like 10 minutes left.
We're almost out. Yeah.
We're almost out. And now I'm doing some fucking real bullshit.
Like you've turned to Sarah and you're like, I'll be done in 15 minutes.
Yeah.
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 But now this has really slowed you down, huh?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mrs. Doubtfire does, as you know, Me Like a Debonky is our segment about sexual well-being.
Debonky!
Sexual, progressive sexual politics.
Yep.
And then just doing really good, fun, awesome sex.
Knocking the boots, or as Robin Williams says, maybe this is where you're...
Well, and this is my point, is I think there's... Robin Williams has offered some rebranding options here.
Mm-hmm.
We obviously refer to it as Debonky.
We call it Debonky, yeah.
Mrs. Doubtfire refers to it as sinking the sub,
mm-hmm.
hiding the weasel,
mm-hmm.
parking the porpoise, a bit of the old Humpty Dumpty, little Jack horny, and that's you. The horizontal mambo,
yeah.
The bone dancer, that's me. Rumpel foreskin, the baloney
Rumpel
bop.
Foreskin is funny. I miss that.
And a bit of the old cunning linguistics.
Wow.
A lot of very fun...
A lot of fun ways of talking about it. Very penis-centric.
Well, it is.
For the most part.
Well, okay. I'm glad you noticed, Jack.
Yeah.
There goes my hero. Watch him as he goes.
Thank you.
Yeah. And yes, I'm finally someone said it.
Yeah,
it is
Oh, great! Yeah. I like this. I like this movie. Fucking a little bit too phallocentric for me. But
can I introduce another segment?
You want to introduce another one? Well, I just want to say briefly before we leave this segment, Park the Porpoise is what the Baby Nation did, isn't it?
They parked it in 6 feet underground.
Yeah,
and they killed it with their indifference or dare I say negligence.
Forgive them. And yes, please introduce another segment.
Here's the thing about this segment.
Okay.
That was tough on you.
That was tough.
Future Jack.
Yeah.
Finding Debonky music, figuring out what the thing was there.
I probably had to create a whole new Debonky.
Was there even a thing there? I don't remember.
Yeah.
Sarah says, you said you were gonna be done in 15 minutes.
Yeah.
15 minutes ago. And now you're like, well, I'll be done in 15 minutes now. Except, I have another segment.
Yeah, okay.
Welcome. Let's call it Dinosaur Energy.
To Jurassic Park.
Okay, we don't have segment music for
Big
that.
Big Dinosaur yet. Energy.
Perfect. And then, so what am I doing? I'm probably looking for... segment music for that right now.
Making it or...
Yeah.
Yeah. Going on Fiverr.
Perfect.
They do move in herds.
Big Dinosaur Energy is the thing we talk about. And this
take
movie
five,
has Big
Take 5 million, you're
energy.
Dead.
What's that?
Take five.
Okay.
Take 5 million. You're dead.
And what's that?
That's what Danny Tamborelli says to the dinosaurs.
Is it really Danny Tamborelli? No.
Yep.
His name is Danny...
Hillard.
Hillard, which is nothing like Danny Tamborelli. And Danny Tamborelli is a guy who happened to play Jackie Rudelski in the movie.
Okay, friend.
I gotcha.
My friend.
Yeah. Well, and a guy we met at a meme party once.
Well, and we were co-hosts at another meme party once.
Okay, fine.
We were both judges at a meme costume.
I dressed as once. Business cat.
Yeah.
There's a picture. If anyone wants it, you're gonna
dress as Hover Hand.
If you want a picture of me as Business Cat and a picture of Tanner as Hover Hand, ask in the Baby Nation Facebook group.
Do you remember that Hover Hand costume?
And we will give it to you, but you must ask.
Do you remember that Hover Hand costume?
Yeah, it was fucking amazing.
It was brilliant.
So was my Business Cat costume.
The Hover Hand costume was one of the most impressive things I've ever pulled off.
Yeah, it was brilliant. Yeah.
I had a mannequin hand. Baby Nation, every year in the New York media circles, 10 years ago, there was a party called Hollow Meme where
15
everyone
years
dresses
ago.
Memes.
Yeah.
And Jack and I went every year, and the friend of ours, Lindsay Weber from Who Weekly, put it on.
Yeah.
And every year you had to dress as a meme, and every year I failed to do it.
The first year, here's all you need to know about how long ago this was. The first Hollow Meme party I went to, I dressed as the Twitter fail whale.
Yeah. I dressed as Quap.
By which I mean I wore a Twitter fail whale shirt.
I always failed to consider my costume until the day of, and I had a mannequin hand sitting on my desk, and I rigged up the mannequin hand so it was hovering about 3 inches above
Very
my shoulder.
Good. Yeah, it was cool.
What was the point of this?
I don't know, man. It's dinosaur energy, I guess.
Take 5 million, you're dead.
Yeah, what's that?
That's a fucking wild thing to say to someone.
Who says it?
Bruce Willis.
Bruce Willis.
The guy. Danny Tamborelli.
Robin Williams in this movie.
Yes.
Yes, perfect.
I always want to say his name is Bruce Willis.
Okay. He says that, and he says it
He says him. He's interacting with these dinosaurs. He's playing with dinosaurs. He doesn't think he's being watched. He's doing a whole shtick. The raptor does a rap.
It's how he ends up getting this cool show. Yeah.
Challenging. And then
the raptor does a rap, and it's challenging, and there goes my hero.
He says,
Take 5 million. You're dead.
Yeah.
And that's a fucking fucked up thing to say to someone.
Yeah, especially when
and
they're about to get hit with
energy.
A meteor. Yeah, okay.
Right?
That's the kind of shit that, like, the kind of burns that dinosaurs are doing.
That's like some Joker shit.
Yeah. No, it's fucked.
Take 5 million, you're dead.
What's the implication that you're going to be gone for 5 million years?
He's saying, hey, take 5 minutes. This is a 5-minute break. Wait, actually, it's a 5 million minute break because you're fucking dead. Because
an asteroid's going to hit you.
How many years is 5 million? 5 million minutes in years.
Oh, 5 million minutes.
9 years.
Oh, that's not a long time. That's half,
he's
of,
just saying,
that's half
he's saying
of the
take,
amount of time we've been doing this podcast.
Take
I mean,
9.5 years
twice
off.
Twice the amount of time we've been doing this podcast.
Yeah. It will be half the amount of time we've done the podcast before one of us dies prematurely.
So that's dinosaur energy, and it the film is super focused on this idea of an extinction event, which makes sense because the events of Mrs. Doubtfire, in case you weren't paying attention, do take place following a major biological weapons attack on the United States. Burns, and let's talk about burns. Like, captured a few. This movie is actually full of burns.
Yeah, it's burn heavy. It's all burns.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of that's improv. That's just Robin Williams riffing, man.
Yeah, I don't.
Oh, the part where he was doing an impression of like some old timey TV show that no one's ever heard of. Oh, did you hear the part where he was doing a Ronald Reagan impression? So good. I almost died,
it's
Jack.
It's fucking 93, and it is funny to do a Reagan impression in 93. You just forget it. I'm not even a Robin Williams stan. I think he's great. But the position you appear to be staking out for yourself, that Robin Williams is A, not funny, and B, a bad improviser, it's just there's not an audience for it.
I'm making an audience for it.
Fine. Let's hear your burn.
It's Mrs. Lanningham.
Okay.
Mr. Hillard, do you consider yourself humorous?
Yeah.
And Daniel Hillard says,
I used to.
Yeah.
There was a time when I found myself funny, but today you have proven me wrong. Thank you.
That's funny.
Thank you. And I'm Mrs. Lanningham.
Yeah, you're Mrs. Lanningham. And it's not actually Mrs. Lanningham. It's prototype Mrs. Lanningham.
Cause Mrs. She's in, Selinger.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
She's in the American president. Okay, I've got, here's one. This is what Robin Williams says to, honestly, the Pierce Brosnan character in this movie is like, you expect him
to, Can I guess what he says?
What?
He says, we've come here looking for intelligent life. Oops, there is none.
That's one of the impressions he does. Don't. You're not. No one likes your anti-Robin Williams take. It's just like, you're like, Tanner's one-man show about how Robin Williams actually wasn't funny has zero people in the audience.
This movie is not funny. Robin Williams is a beloved improv actor.
Yeah, partially because of this great movie. Listen, here's my burn. So, Thomas Crown Affair is actually really nice in this movie. You keep expecting him to do a heel turn, but he never does. He's just like a nice and handsome boyfriend for Sally Fields.
Yep.
And is it Sally Field or Sally Fields? Nobody knows. Nobody can say. Nobody knows. Yep. Thomas Crown Affair does this like huge, like big triple flip dive into the pool at a pool party. And he looks great. And as he's about to dive, Mrs. Doubtfire says to the kids,
look, Maddie, that's called liposuction.
That's funny. That's a burn. That's just a bonus burn.
Okay.
And then he gets out of the pool and he's like glistening.
You think he's had liposuction?
No. He's glistening and he looks good. And he like saunters over and Sally Fields is like all a flutter.
Mm-hmm.
And then Mrs. Doubtfire pointedly looks at his Speedo.
His bing bong.
And says,
oh, by the looks of you, that water's so cold.
Yeah.
That's funny.
The implication being what there?
That it's cold out, I guess.
Yeah. It doesn't seem cold. They're like outside and they're swimming and...
Yeah, but like he looks California. Like it must be cold.
Northern California.
And then the daughter, Mara Wilson, says to...
Matilda.
Pierce Brosnan.
Your tummy looks different from my daddy's.
Right.
And that's a burn, too.
And that's a burn, too. Because Robin Williams is, he calls himself short, round, and fuzzy, I think, at one point.
Yeah.
Mrs. Doubtfire does. Mrs. Doubtfire calls
Robin Williams. It's complicated, and I do have a fan theory that's a final theory, which is that Mrs. Doubtfire and Robin Williams are actually two different people in this movie. And it's a better way to understand the film.
Okay. I think, I actually don't know if anyone would argue with that.
But it's not the same. It's like
Robin Williams is like a beloved character actor who starred in this film.
And Mrs. Doubtfire.
I don't think anyone would say that he was Mrs. Doubtfire. I think Mrs. Doubtfire is a character.
Oh, sorry. That Mr. Hillard.
Okay. Danny Tamborelli.
Danny Hillard and Mrs. Doubtfire. Danny Tamborelli, sorry. And Mrs. Doubtfire are two different people in this film.
Okay.
And doesn't it make the movie more interesting?
If they were actually two different people.
Yeah.
It sort of takes the punch out of the ending because what that means is like Danny Hillard didn't learn anything.
But think about it.
And didn't grow.
I know, but it's an interesting movie. Where, right. So,
but it also means that like...
If you think about it as different
Mrs.
people...
Mrs. Doubtfire is a pretty interesting character.
Let's play it out. If you think about it as different people, it's a movie about the beginning of the movie, a man loses his job and gets a divorce. Then the middle of the movie, his ex-wife hires a weird housekeeper.
Yeah.
And then at the end of the movie, the man gets a new job. It's kind of a little bit avant-garde. And like, and never the twain shall meet.
It's like French cinema.
Yeah. It's just like two vignettes. It's like two characters in search of an author, right? Pirandello.
You want to talk about Luigi?
Yes.
Let's talk about Luigi.
Okay.
Not my favorite.
He's a famous Italian
Mario Kart
playwright.
Character. I think probably in modern Mario Kart.
I think we're
Tanuki
across
Mario.
Purposes. He's a famous Italian playwright who wrote six characters in search of an author. I don't know the actual number.
Two. Mrs. Doubtfire. And...
Well, in this case, it's two. And think about it.
And that's the screenplay that this film was based on, but a lot of it is improv.
Yeah.
You know that?
Yeah. Some of the scenes that were improvised, I know this from IMDb, the scene where Mrs. Doubtfire's cake face mask is dripping into the tea, that was improvised.
It was actually kind of funny.
It was very funny, but like apparently like the lights on set melted the cake, and that whole scene was improvised.
That scene was funny. Fine. Yeah. I just don't like impressions. How about that?
Wow. Okay, now we're learning. I think it's probably time for us to leave.
Fine.
Is there anything else you want to... Oh, can I pitch something to you?
Pitch?
Pitch something to you.
Fine.
You and I write this. We write it together. Ready?
What? The film?
I'm about to say what it is.
This film?
No! Listen to me. What are you... You're Googling something. I need you to stop.
I'm seeing how much a Dreamcast costs on eBay so I can convince you to play Seaman for an upcoming episode.
I like that idea. And I am down to
$120.
Great. Let's
still
do it.
Like it?
Yeah, let's do it. Seaman is a thing where you babysit a thing. That's a game.
Yeah.
People don't know that. Listen, you and I write this.
Okay.
It's called The League of Extraordinary Babysitters. It's a trade.
You think Alan Moore will come after us?
No, it's a fucking graphic novel.
I mean, that it's gonna help Alan Moore's case if anything.
Alan Moore's too busy like being like a weird like fucking.
No, he loves this shit.
He loves like suing people.
He loves being litigious.
Yeah, it's called The League of Extraordinary Babysitters. I haven't quite figured out what the thing is, but like some cosmic baby has arrived and needs to be sat in some very important way. And so they have to assemble from throughout time. Mrs. Doubtfire.
I got it.
Christy Thomas. Walter from Walter World. Steve from Stranger Things.
5 billion years in
the future. Okay.
The sun is about to go supernova. Humanity has advanced to the degree that we know how to tap into the space-time continuum in such a way that we can seed a new universe when our universe collapses.
Okay, yeah.
Okay, and what we need is...
Caretakers.
Shepherds.
Yeah.
Caretakers to see this new infant universe through its maturity.
Yes.
Until we can repopulate the galaxy once again. And it's the last throes of humanity. And we've gone back in time and found the best babysitters in history.
Yeah. Okay. Isn't that good? Whoever babysitted Romulus and Remus. After
we're assembling
them to
put them in a
Romulus
pod
and
launch them into a black hole to generate the new...
Whoever
universe.
Found Moses in the fucking in the stream.
I think it was Jesus.
No, it wasn't Jesus.
I think so.
I know it wasn't.
It's been a while since I read the Bible. I think it was Jesus.
It definitely was.
Well, it was definitely... Well, then it was the Pharaoh.
Look, it's time to park this porpoise. That's something that I want.
Okay.
Hey, it's time for Daddy to park this porpoise.
Yeah.
I know you've got a porpoise to park as well, so I don't want to keep you.
Yeah.
We're going to end this episode. I want us to keep thinking about this concept of the League of Extraordinary Babysitters.
Bone Dancer. Oh, we have to come up. We have to add something to the outro, and I think we probably do this.
What?
I'm sending it to you.
Okay, you're sending me something for the outro. What I would like to say is thank you so much to everybody for bearing with us. I'd like to thank you, Tanner, for bearing with me. I would like to remind everybody, please, for the love of God, to subscribe to our Patreon. You absolutely must subscribe to our Patreon. It's patreon.com/BSCC podcast. We have a whole other podcast, and it's good and fun, and everybody likes it. Please join the party. It's great over there, and it's only $5 a month. Not a lot. Please also join the Baby Nation Facebook group, rate and review our show on Apple Podcasts, and buy our merch. Our merch can be found at bit.ly/BSCCmerch. All that remains is for me to say that this week we read a novel. It was, what was it? A
visual radio novel.
We read a visual radio novel this week. It was called Mrs. Doubtfire. Mm-hmm. Next week, we haven't figured it out, actually.
Yeah, we can consult the list. I want to do something a little...
You've been saying you want to do something a little off the beaten track.
How about a comic book?
There's a Wolverine and X-Men thing. If you want to curate that, we can talk about it.
Or Lone Wolf and Cub.
I mean, Lone Wolf, the problem with Lone Wolf and Cub is that it's like literally no one knows what it is.
It's one of the most famous manga in the world.
Literally no one has any concept. I mean, I'm down to do it, but it might be a little much.
Let me look at the list real quick. Shut up.
Okay, I'm here. Wolverine.
Hey, what did I just say to you?
Let me look at the list real quick.
And then?
And then shut up. We don't have to decide now.
We're not going to decide now.
And we're not going to decide now. What we're going to do is we're going to put in the Facebook group, which you must join.
You know what Baby we're going to do?
We're going to say what it is.
You know what we're going to do?
What?
A Twitter poll.
Okay, perfect.
We're going to find three pieces of written media, be it comic book or book.
Yeah.
And we're going to poll you to see which one you want us to do.
And follow us on Twitter at BSCC Podcast.
Yep.
All that remains is for me to say this week that I have been Jack Alexander Shepard.
My name is the Bone Dancer.
This is the way. Berries to blood. There is no God, and we are his prophets. Seek the sub, hide the weasel, park the porpoise, a bit of the old Humpty Dumpty.
Did we not come up with one for Adventures in Babysitting or Stranger Things?
And neither did we.
Well, how lazy are we?
I don't know if we did for Stranger Things. I haven't edited it yet.
I think
we did. Jack Horny, the Horizontal Mambo, the Bone Dancer, Rumble Foreskin, Baloney Bop, a bit of the old Cunning Linguistics, route off the corners in your bedroom, drown all your dolls, call your senator and demand your right to bear time, and do not forget to let Daddy love you as much as I do. Remember the Delaney's. Remember the Trip Man. Take your dream horse through that maze.
I may be a pretty shitty boyfriend, but it turns out I'm actually a pretty damn good babysitter.
Claudia's wearing a bra now, and the way she talks, you would think that boys had just been. Okay, I'm playing, recording again. One.
Guess how much money I've made off Bitcoin?
$11.
$12 now.
Okay, great. What a fucking... There goes my hero.
Riding the derecho, buddy.
Okay, here we go. Ready?
That was a HeadGum Podcast.